Hello, I'm Trey Marone, and welcome to the West Virginia Educast. On today's episode, we will discuss a topic that applies to every county school district in West Virginia. That's real estate. Every county school board in West Virginia owns real estate, but how often does a school board find itself needing to dispose of it? What about acquiring new property? Today, we will highlight and discuss a number of issues that county school boards might face or need to consider when it becomes necessary to acquire or dispose of real property. Joining me today is a man who has nearly 35 years of experience doing real estate work over thousands of acres in West Virginia, Mark D'Antoni. Mark is a partner at Bowles Rice and is no stranger to the education field or the education law group at the firm. He frequently assists the firm's education clients in the acquisition and disposition of real estate. Mark was recently named to the 2022 edition of the Best Lawyers in America and recognized for his work in real estate law and corporate law. In addition to his work at the firm, Mark enjoys supporting the Marshall University community through his affiliations with the Marshall Big Green and Marshall Tip-Off Club. Welcome, Mark.
Hi, Trey. Thank you for inviting me to be on this podcast. I've been looking forward to it, and I really do appreciate it.
Thanks for being here. Hey, let's just dive right in here, Mark. You know, when a county board of education owns land that, for whatever reason, it no longer needs for the they don't need it for the operation of the school system, does the board have to hold on to the property?
The board does not have to hold on to the property. The board may sell or lease the land and all the buildings located on the land at auction. The board may also lease the oil, gas, and other minerals of the property. And another possible route for the board is that the board may convey the property to certain public bodies, including the state of West Virginia and its political subdivisions, or to certain qualifying nonprofit tax-exempt corporations for community use.
Okay. So
they do have several avenues they could proceed on.
Okay. And you know, because we've known each other a while and we've talked, you know, I was on a school board in a county for several years. And, you know, I do know from my own personal experience that sometimes schools are closed, there's consolidated schools built, and there may be property that the school district just has no more need for. They don't really see any benefit in hanging on to it. And they really don't want the expense of maintaining that property. So you're saying that boards have options available to them regarding the disposition of that property?
Absolutely. And in many of those dispositions that we talked about, the deed or lease will have provisions in there actually making the purchaser, you know, assume any hazards associated with the property. And in case of a lease, having the lessee agree to maintain the property at the lessee's cost. So yes, they may hold on to it in the form of granting a lease, but they can certainly shift responsibilities to the lessee there. And then in a deed, they can also shift any responsibilities for any hazards associated with it.
And some of the property that falls into this kind of category that county school boards might be looking to dispose of, who knows what's on that property? It could be a variety of things. It might be school buildings. It might be other things. I mean, especially if the county's owned the property for, you know, 100 years. I mean, who knows what's on the property or where it's located?
Right.
Does it make a difference when a county board is looking to dispose of property? Does it make a difference whether or not there's a school or other buildings on the land?
It does not make a difference on the right to sell the property. Once you've decided that the property is no longer needed for school purposes, there may be some instances where maybe a possible purchaser doesn't want to take on those hazards or liabilities, maybe due to asbestos or some other problem. The school board has the option in that case to actually tear down the building, but that might be at the school board's cost to get that done so that they could proceed to sell the property at auction or some other permitted type of sale, but they do have that option.
Okay. Well, you've mentioned the word auction a few times, and we do hear of auctions for the sale of unneeded school lands and buildings But does the sale of property have to be by auction when you're a county school board?
Very good question. School boards are corporations created by statute and have only those rights to sell or lease property that are provided by statute. The applicable West Virginia statutes and case law, interpreting those statutes, provide that a school board must sell its real property by auction unless there is another statute that would permit the board to sell or lease property without having to go through the auction process.
So it sounds like kind of the general, at least the kind of the general idea is that you would be selling by auction, but there are other alternative ways or means by which a school district might dispose of property that's not necessarily an auction.
That's exactly right. And as we touched on just briefly before, there are statutes which do permit the school board to sell or lease its real property to certain public bodies, and including the state of West Virginia's political subdivisions like county commissions and municipal corporations, and also to certain qualifying nonprofit tax-exempt corporations where there'll be a community use involved. But these are certain statutes that where you don't have to go through the auction process. But other than that, other than these few exceptions, the school board will have to go through the auction process.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Real property.
And you mentioned, I think, early on and a couple times since then about leasing. So let's say a county board has a piece of property that they don't really need anymore to operate a school on, but it's valuable and they want to lease it maybe instead of selling it for whatever. Maybe it creates a good revenue stream for them and they think that's something that they could benefit from. Is that like leasing the property to basically raise funds or generate funds? Is that something that a county school district can consider?
Absolutely. Now, you won't be able to enter into a lease, just directly with the oil and gas developer without first going through the auction process. So it's not like if you're approached by a mineral company, they'd like to lease your minerals. You may be able to do that, but you first will have to go through the auction process. And then if that company is the highest bidder, a responsible bidder at that auction, the board would then be able to enter into a lease with the oil and gas company or coal company, as the case may be.
Well, and very consistent, even with the sale about this auction, and we're even going to have to kind of basically put it out in the public for someone to even be able to obtain a lease of this property. And why is that? I mean, probably could have answered that myself. But what's your response to that? What is the reason why these things are done in public auctions, whether it's a lease or a sale?
Like you said, you probably could answer it better than me. But my thought is that you're dealing with public funds, and you want to make sure there's no inside deal that maybe someone might have with a particular person or company. So you offer it up to the public, and whoever is the highest responsible bidder is really who should end up leasing it or being able to acquire it. So
yeah. And I think that's consistent with what our listeners, we've had other programs on, agendas, and we'll do them on Freedom of Information Act, and you got Open Governmental Meetings Act. And, the county board is handling the public's business, and they want things to be out in the open, transparent, fair and even handed. So that auction process, whether it's by lease or sale, is the best way, it would seem like, to guarantee that openness and transparency to the public. Moving on to kind of another thought is sometimes we hear about a school board deeding property to another unit of government or another entity for that matter without an auction. Is that lawful? And I'm asking for two reasons, because when I was on the school board, we did that. So let's kind of backtrack here, make sure we did was okay.
Well, you're okay. Okay. So that's good. Yes, there are certain statutes that do, in each statute that you analyze, they have their own, they prescribe certain rules to where you can do that. In some instances, it's for adequate consideration, and other statutes might provide for nominal consideration. But you'll have to find that statute which authorizes it to sell to or lease to another unit of government, and also comply with the terms of the statute with that. But Yes, there are several statutes out there, and each one has its own different little rules of how you do it. But where you can just deed the properties to a municipal corporation, a city, or to the state of West Virginia, or to the county commission, possibly in some instances you can find some statutes for economic development authorities. You may
501c3
do that, and right, and 501c3. Now those are interesting, and the sale to nonprofit tax-exempt corporations, those statutes do have deeded to them. Statute requires you to put a reverter provision actually in the deed, so that if that tax-exempt nonprofit corporation ceases to exist or ceases to use the property for charitable, economic development, or other community use, so within the five-year period of the grant, the title to that property automatically reverts back to the school board. So the school board can be, boy, we're really happy we got rid of that piece of property. And lo and behold, in about 3 or 4 years down the road, they're the owner of that property.
Well, that was actually a specific situation of one of the situations I was involved in, and it was a piece of property that went to a nonprofit. And I remember we had to have a five-year clause in there that it would revert if certain conditions were not met. So that, in practice, for sure, and properties of school systems, historically, I think, originally were built in the population center, in the middle of town, very key locations for a lot of these old schools. And I've seen, a lot of consolidations over my career, and generally speaking, but not always, but a lot of consolidated schools tend to be moved outside of town. They draw from a larger area, and it might be more central to the two or three communities that are going to go to that school. So these properties that, counties no longer have the use for school might be in a really vital location, for economic development or for something that could benefit the community in the absence of that school. So those 501c3 situations, or even the sale to, through auction to another entity, could be a real boost to the economy. So you're saying that those things, there's provisions and statutes that really can navigate the way, regardless of whether or not a county school board is going to just sell through auction, they're going to transfer it, maybe, for some other benefit, as long as it's going to a 501c3 or a government entity, the transfer part. But not auction. Is that right? And I may have said way too much there.
No, that is correct. I mean, there are statutes out there that permit exchange of property and conveyances between public bodies. There's a statute there that some you can utilize in some instances. Others allow you to sell straight to the state of West Virginia's political subdivision. So, yeah, there are several different statutes. Each one's kind of unique, and you have to follow kind of the terms of the statute and what it requires. But yes, there are various avenues of getting the property, and typically it's to a public body and it's for public use type situation. It allows you to get outside of the auction process.
Okay. So from what I'm hearing you say, I take it that unlike a private citizen, a school board can't just list its property with a real estate agent and go through that process to sell the land to just anyone who makes an offer.
That is correct.
Okay. Which kind of simplifies things, but some people might think, hey, we'll just get our friendly real estate agent down the street to throw a sign out, school for sale. Still have to go through that public auction that you've talked a good bit about here.
Right.
What another interesting little thing, and I have to say, I'm not sure I had kind of seen this so much or heard about it until I was working so much on a statewide basis. But, some school districts own some interesting types of property throughout West Virginia that one might not think or expect a school district to own. So a question that came to mind was, let's say a school district either has or wants to retain the mineral rights to a piece of property, but they don't need it for school necessarily, for a school building to be located on, but they want to maintain or retain ownership of that property for the benefit of the minerals beneath the property. Can they do that?
Yes, they can. I mean, there is a statute, West Virginia Code 18-5-7, that does permit a county board where the county board has, you know, has determined that it's no longer needed for school purposes. The county board may offer the property for lease. And that is for minerals or just any other lease that it may want to lease the property for. And so, yes, I mean, they have the ability to lease property and to continue to own that property, even after they've determined it's no longer needed for school purposes, if they think it'll be in the best interest, sort of the best interest of the school system and the community for them to lease it.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, you know, just to kind of wrap up our podcast episode here, I was wondering if you would care to maybe summarize for the listeners or step through the process for the auction or sale.
Absolutely. We'll just go down and kind of hit the highlights here real quick. You know, the first thing would need to be done is the school board would have to determine the property is no longer needed for school purposes. And then after that, normally legal counsel is contacted to actually maybe go to the record room and locate all the deeds by which the board acquired the property to make sure they still own the property or haven't sold any part of it so you can properly describe it in the sale. And then you proceed to have a public auction or to advertise the auction, which typically is a class two legal advertisement where you say that you're going to have the auction on this day and time and you describe the property. And a class two legal advertisement is basically, if you're familiar, if people are familiar with deed of trust foreclosure sales, that's the same type of advertisement that you'll be doing for the auction. And then you would give a period of time where any prospective purchasers maybe they could give a call to whoever from the board is going to be running the auction, see the property, inspect the property. And then you show up and you have the sale. And typically it's, you know, whoever the highest responsible bidder is typically the one that will convey the property. But the person who conducts the auction, after it's done, will then report the sale or possible sale back to the board for their final approval. And then after that, you proceed to a closing. There are one little thing that people should be aware of in the statute, in the auction statute, that in rural communities, if you're selling a school property that's situated in a rural community, the original grantor of that property or that grantor's heirs or assigns has a statutory right at the auction sale to actually buy that property. And it depends what you have to do. You have to go back and find a statute that was in effect when the original grantor sold that property to the school board, because it is a statute, not today's statute, but it's that old statute to what governs the rights of this statutory right of repurchase. And it, you know, it depends. They may be able to buy it for a fair value or for exactly what the board paid to them back in the day. If the board gave them $100, well, they could buy it back for $100.
Well, you know, that is very helpful information. And I know, again, when I was on the school board, we had a piece of property that actually was one of the pieces of property that would probably have been more suitable for auction because it was in fairly good condition. Schools that have closed aren't necessarily always in the best condition or may not be something that you would want to turn around and try to lease. But we had a piece of property that, you know, we were looking at options, you know, to maybe lease it or to make, you know, other use of it. So we did what you're speaking of and, you know, and had some title work done to make sure, you know, about the ownership of the property. And lo and behold, I didn't know this, but we've learned that the property was actually had come to the school, the county school system, in three different deeds, in three different parcels, because I guess it had kind of grown over time.
Right.
And two of those three deeds had reverter type clauses or conditional clauses that kind of, you know, if it's no longer used for school purposes, then here's what is triggered. And I think that's more common than people might think, especially with older schools, because so many you know, over time when school districts were building schools and things, you know, local people and residents owned the property they needed. And in the interest of education, they'd say, hey, we'll give the school district this section over here you need so you can expand or put a football field, whatever it is you're going to do. But we want to get it back if no longer going to use it, you know, down the road. So those kinds of clauses, especially those older transactions, might be a little bit more prevalent than people might think. So it's a great idea, obviously, and very important and necessary to do that title work before you decide you're going to auction something off or try to sell it, because you may or may not have full and complete.
Right.
That's probably not the right word, full and complete. What is it from your perspective?
And that reverter deed, that is separate and apart from the right to statutory right to repurchase that I just discussed in these reverter deeds. It doesn't matter whether it's in a rural community or what. It is fairly common actually to see reverter provisions in the deed. And sometimes, you know, you might not, sometimes it's real clear it's a reverter provision because it says if the school is no longer needed for school purposes, title to the property shall revert. Well, you know, you pretty much know that's a reverter provision. Sometimes the reverter provision could be worded as, we hereby grant and convey you the property so long as it's used for school purposes, period.
Right.
And that also, under the law, can be deemed to be a reverter provision.
Yeah. Well, and especially if you're going to intended use, one of the things we were looking at was still for educational purposes, but it was going to be a different kind of arrangement. Mm-hmm. And we did think that, I think, then one of those that it did fit exactly with what you're saying is it was going to continue to be for educational purposes. So the reverter didn't necessarily kick in, but repurchase language, reverter language, mm-hmm. all those things are the types of things that school districts want to be aware of before they make a move on trying to transfer or sell property, because those things can trigger a whole lot of problems and make what might seem to be a simple situation very complicated.
Oh,
very
quickly. Oh, absolutely. Because once the school board has determined it's no longer needed for school purposes and goes to sell it, well, if there was a reverter in that deed, it probably just reverted and you don't own it anymore.
Right.
And the board has nothing to sell.
Well, always best to find out before than after.
Right.
Say, listen, Mark, I know you and I could talk for hours about this stuff, but we appreciate your time and insight answering a number of key questions county school boards may have regarding the purchase, the sale, really the sale, transfer of property, or maybe even the purchase of property. But, you know, many counties may not realize that there are options available when they're going to sell or transfer land, and that sometimes there might be some unexpected obstacles or pitfalls that could present themselves when dealing with property transfers and sales. And it's best to check those things out in advance instead of finding out after the fact. So we hope this episode and Mark's appearance here will help our listeners have a more clear understanding and maybe simplify what might or could become a very complicated situation when dealing with real estate law in West Virginia as it pertains to county school board owned property. Mark, thank you again for being with us here today. Much appreciated. Always love to hear your thoughts and on all these things. You've got so much experience and just hands-on experience in West Virginia with all these issues. Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Trey. Really appreciate it.
All right. Well, be sure to join us, listeners, for another episode of the West Virginia EduCast, where we're going to discuss very interesting topics that I know that you're looking forward to hearing and seeing that are all relevant to education law in West Virginia. Until then, I'm Trey Marone, and this is the West Virginia EduCast. Thanks for taking a listen.